Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
What's up, guys? This is Max here, and I'm really excited to invite you to watch my Color Vision Deluxe Experience live concert on Live by Live this February. It's going to be brilliant. We're playing Blueberry Eyes, Lights Down Low, Love Me Less, all the songs off my album. I hope you can join us. Tickets at livexlive.com/max, and I'll see you February 27th, only on Live by Live.
Well, we talk about Matt driving the new Bugatti Pure Sport.
It's incredible.
We'll get into the update on the T50 Gordon Murray supercar, and we'll talk a little about a race car we've been keeping an eye on, a vet on Bring a Trailer. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other. Come on now. That's what you do with your home. Then you got your automotive insurance. So you got a bundle, man. Take those policies. Geico makes it easy. Take your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. So you just go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could be saving, because Geico makes it easy to bundle at geico.com. Got to get it on. Welcome to CarCast. Adam Carolla. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hello.
Over there. What's going on?
How are you?
I'm well. Are you driving that VW SUV?
Yeah, I see the VW Atlas.
Yeah.
I just got it like this morning, though, so I haven't really spent too much time in it. But I do like the color. It's like a green. It's like a dark green.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
What's the sticker on that thing?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I haven't got any. I just got it. We just swapped it out, and I didn't see the Monroney in there, so I got to go back to them and get all the specs and stuff in it. But
let's take a guess at what the base is on that thing.
I the one I'm even driving, it's not outfitted with like a ton of options, no sunroof and all that stuff. It's probably starts in the high 30s and probably goes to 48-ish.
You know, I'd say it starts in the low 40s.
Yeah.
I was thinking even higher, but
I'm not sure.
MSRP is $31,500
for the Atlas?
Yeah, 2021 Volkswagen Atlas MSRP from $31,500.
Yeah. Well, then
they must offer some kind of like 1.9 liter four banger,
but
something.
It's
big.
It's a big SUV. Because the Tiguan is the smaller one, and the Atlas is big. And this isn't like, whatever, like the Atlas R model or something that I'm driving, but I had a feeling it would be in the 30s. I didn't think it would be 31,000. I thought it would be, it just seemed like it would have been important for VW to have a 3 in front of it.
The 31
yeah,
must
so that's
be the
gutless. S configuration, then the SE will be about 35, and then the SE with technology is 37.
Wow, it's a low base. Is it? Does that thing have a four banger in it?
It's a weird thing. It's not fast, but it's not slow because I just got out of this little Lexus hybrid SUV, and it was surprisingly slow. So this feels peppier, mm-hmm. but not. It's not catching your attention. It just feels like it's okay for the size of the vehicle.
The S is a 2-liter four-cylinder with 235. Must have a turbo on there.
Yeah.
Oh, probably has a turbo on there. But is there V6 at the top of the line? Because it's still
cheap. It seems like they got to have a V6 option. And this feels like the one I'm driving maybe has the 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but also you got to keep in mind, it's like I think Tanner Faust, right? Because Tanner's racing a lot of VW stuff,
mm-hmm.
and he drives an Atlas, and I think he did some crazy video with one of these,
mm-hmm.
If I recall. I could be wrong, and that sort of implied to me that there's like an R line or an R model or some version of the Atlas something.
Yeah, goes up to V6 at 42K. Well, so now we're getting a little closer to where I was thinking about. The thing looked so big, I didn't think it had a four banger in it. So I was always in kind of V6 mode, maybe V6 even a V8, although I don't know if VW does a V8, but
V6 is the highest I'm seeing.
Right, and that's at 42K.
Yeah.
That seems a little
What was the horsepower of that one? The V6? Do you know?
Well, they
Oh, we lost you. I can't hear
premium edition. Just the regular one has 276 horsepower.
Okay. So what is it, like a 50, 40 horsepower jump?
Actually, I'm looking at all the other ones. Yeah, it's all 276.
So this one here doesn't have a lot of, like, no sunroof. It has a power seat, but minimum, you know, and there's no, like, power seat memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it has a CarPlay and the touchscreen. So if this is the V6, it's a base V6. If it's not a V6, then it's kind of a middle of the line, you know, four cylinder engine. If it's the four cylinder, then it's actually quick for the four cylinder. And then the V6, I can see being a little peppier. So I'll have to go back and find out. The first time I drove it was here this morning.
Yeah, I'm assuming the four has a turbo. Max Pat will tell us, because I am old enough to remember when the highest horsepower per liter car was the Honda 2000.
Yeah, 240.
240. This is naturally aspirated.
Yeah.
You know, 120 per liter. And then I think that got beat out by the Ferrari 360, which, I don't know, had 396 or something. It had a little bit more per liter. But if that is...
Yeah, turbocharged four-cylinder. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the thing is really, you're getting a horsepower bump, but I think with the V6, you're probably buying the torque.
The torque, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you want out of that configuration.
Which is interesting because, you know, I can get into the Lexus more, but I drove this Lexus, the NX300H, which is their small SUV hybrid. And it was a little off-putting. I mean, I like the Lexus. It's a great quality brand. I'm a fan of their vehicles. Their touchpad is a little wonky. And I drove that bright blue. That was kind of nice. But even for the hybrid, it just felt like it needed a lot of throttle just to get it going. You know, mm-hmm. And you're thinking, oh, maybe that electric motor kicks in
mm-hmm.
and gives you that 0-30, just that little bite mm-hmm. off the line. And it just didn't have that at all. And easing into the throttle didn't seem to move the vehicle at all. Like, you really had to push it down. And it's just weird. It's just like, then I started to drive it and kind of hyper-mile it.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled to get 25 miles per gallon. I hit the 25, but mm-hmm. I was floating around the 24s. And I just mm-hmm. kind of feel like a modern-day hybrid like that with Toyota's technology might be doing a little better, or would have been a little quicker and sacrifice some of the miles per gallon. It just didn't seem like it was a win to me. But if that's not what you're looking for, then it's a fantastic SUV. And it's a regular hybrid. It's not a plug-in hybrid. But I think my mom's RAV4 hybrid that we got mm-hmm. for her, that felt quicker to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the NX is sort of the fancy version of that. Right? So I guess I got to really compare the two vehicles and see why this one wasn't really performing the way I thought it was.
All right, we'll do your 15-second Dodge, and Max Zapata, you can bring a trailer because there's a car we're following there.
Yeah. You know, Dodge, you guys have heard this before, is ranked number one in initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule your test drive today.
What are you looking for?
So there was a car that was at Fantasy Junction, which was a Pratt & Miller Vette. That had some Le Mans experience and won its class at Sebring in Daytona. It was 2014, but I was like, I said it on the show. I think they were trying to get like 795 for it, or mm-hmm. somewhere in the eight department for it. I said, I think that's a good buy if you're looking for something modern and you want a modern day. Well, I don't know what you want, but you want something with some international experience, some Le Mans experience, some Sebring experience, wins, some Daytona stuff. This is a car to get and sit on because I think it'll be a good investment.
Yeah.
I guess it was about eight. It's about 425 now with 5 days left. I don't know. We should make some predictions.
Yeah, let me just say this about as
now,
much as I love
it. I should say, sorry for cutting off, that it sat at Fantasy Junction for 4 months. It $795 and there was no purchase.
Right. So arguably it wasn't getting, you know, maybe there was offers, who knows, but obviously below that. As much as I love Bring a Trailer, I feel like the headline, instead of being 2014 Chevrolet Corvette C7R GT factory race car by Pratt & Miller, should be C7R GT race car Sebring and Daytona winner.
Yeah, I'd put Sebring and Daytona winner
I feel like
up
that's
front.
More important than the Pratt & Miller part. We can figure that out in the text.
Like, right.
What? Just go with the wins? I think the wins are more important.
Yeah, I would put that front and center. I agree. So, you know, the interesting thing here will be, we'll see if Bring a Trailer can do better than an established car website where that's been around for 40 years, where it's been, you know, featured for several months.
Right. And the Fantasy Junction was what, 798, you said? 790 something, 790?
My recollection, and we could check the tape or somebody could check the tape, but we were talking about this car about 6-8 weeks ago, and I was saying I like it. I think this is a good value purchase. Not to flip it, but if you want to sit on it, again, it's 2014, so you go, well, that's not old. Yeah, but I was buying cars from the 80s and 90s that people didn't think were old at the time, and now they're 35 years old. You know what I mean?
Right. This is being sold by the dealer. This is a dealer listing from Emeryville, California.
So, right.
So they're listing it. So
mid-December is what Max Zapata said.
All right. So if we had a guess, we're guessing somewhere between the current bid of 425 and the listing that you recalled at just about 800, right?
Well, I recalled about 800. Maybe it was like 785 or something like that. Maybe been right up against 8. But the thing that's kind of interesting about it is everyone is always trying to kind of figure out the algorithm of Bring a Trailer, and things vary from car to car, mm-hmm. but they're still rhythms. You know what I mean? Like, we were looking at the Lambo 400 last week, and that thing was sitting at 225 or something like that, with about 5 days out, and then it popped, and then it ended up doubling that number. Maybe ended up going for like 287 or something like that. So to me, because I'm very rhythm oriented, I try to look at cars and go, what number's it at 7 days out or 5 days out? Like, what's it at? And can we count on that number doubling, or is there any kind of rhythm that we can assign to it?
Yeah.
I think that a car like this, 5 days out, already at 425, which is respectable, I think the rhythm is it can double. I don't think it doubles 2 days out. But at 5 days out, I think at 5 days to a week out, I think these kind of numbers can double.
This is a tough one, like you say, because there's not a lot of comps. Like, you know, we saw that nice Aston Martin at RM some years ago. That did very well, beat the estimate by a significant margin.
That was in
margin.
The high sixes.
Yeah. And that was maybe something like 200,000 more than the estimate. Although it was no reserve car.
I just remember we looked at it and we went, ooh, that's a cool car. It's no reserve.
Yeah.
It's got a weird story. That thing could fall through the cracks. Let's keep an eye on it.
It did not fall through the cracks. Because I think the estimate had like a 4 in front of it.
And
I think you and I are going to think a little differently on this car. I think this thing sells for in the sixes, and it's such a wide margin, I couldn't say for sure, so I'm going to just shoot right in the middle and say 650,000.
I'm going to just pop it by 100 grand and go with 750. I'm just rooting for it because, like I said, any race car's good, and anything with Daytona and, you know, Sebring and Le Mans history, I'm always rooting for. So I'm gonna go with 750 or above.
All right, make note. Somebody write that down. Where are we gonna be in 5 days?
Oh, $950 is what it was offered for, according to Max Bato. Okay.
They wanted $950.
Yeah, every article is saying that Fantasy Junction was selling it for $950.
Okay. Well, they were asking too much.
Well, evidently, but we shall see what it ends up going for.
Yeah. Now, we don't know it's going to sell. We don't know if it's a reserve car or not, right? I don't know if it says it on the listing. I don't recall if they say reserve or not, but I don't think so.
It's got a Recaro racing seat.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It's got to be worth something.
It's got one of those Bosch digital displays you don't know how to work.
Well.
When they deliver it to you, is it going to be in pit mode?
Track mode.
Or track mode.
Yeah, my favorite part of that exchange is when the guy said to me, "You had it in pit mode." like I touched it. like I put my hand up and started scrolling through displays with a toggle button or something on it. Like, I didn't get near that stupid thing.
Yeah.
You guys left it in pit mode is how it would be more accurately described, I would say. That, by the way, that little exchange could be distilled down to every facet of life, which is the guy responsible for leaving it in pit mode when I pulled in after practice and said, "There's no information on this thing. I got like oil temp and amps, but I got no RPM or speed or gear." He's like, "Oh, because you had it in pit mode." See, that's a very interesting thing. That's kind of my adult life. Yeah. I had it in pit mode?
Yeah.
Let's do a little internalizing here, fella. You, who are on the crew, left it.
He could have just said,
"From track mode."
Oh, it was in pit mode.
Yes.
And then everyone's off the hook.
Yes. You got it from track mode. You put it in pit mode, and then you forgot to put it back to track mode. That could be a learning experience. I would argue you had it in pit mode. It's not really a learning experience for the crew members.
Yeah, right. He could have said, "Oh, it was in pit mode because, you know, Claudio likes to switch it over on the way out. You know, like he likes to control it."
Right.
You know, like, I don't know. Seems a little.
No, it's the easiest thing in the world. Everyone who drives the car knows what to do. You know what I mean? Danny. Who am I trying to think of? Tommy Dreese. Yeah, Tommy Dreese. Tommy Dreese probably just does it himself when he pulls out onto the track.
Sure,
so
does.
They're kind of used to putting it in pit mode and then just go out there because the driver switches it.
Right.
But they didn't figure out the part where I've never driven the car before.
Kind of seemed like it'd be a theme for the day, but maybe they figured it out. I was looking at the specs on that car, and it has the X-Track sequential transmission in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the X-Track sequential transmission. And that stood out to me because I don't know if you saw this news that just came out yesterday, but Gordon Murray's T50 supercar with the fan on it, right?
The rear fan that created the vacuum.
So he
sucked it down.
Yeah. He just announced a track only version of the car that he calls the T50 Niki Lauda. He named it after Niki because the original fan car that he designed, Niki drove that.
Mm-hmm.
And just an homage to his friend. And one of the things that he brought up, of course, is even more aero, a little bit more power from the Cosworth engine. But the street car has a conventional manual transmission.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's just more fun. But the race car has this same X-Track sequential transmission in it, so it's going to be even faster.
I don't know that the sequential is less fun than a conventional.
Well, I just think on the street, if you're just driving around and you want like a proper manual.
Yeah, I get it, but I really think it's cooler to have. I mean, I'm a kind of little bit of an old motorcycle guy, and I was just like knowing that the next gear is up or down. You know, there's something to that. You know, I mean, it gives you visual of a stick shift, and it gives you the movement of a stick shift, but it's just nicer, and you don't have the anxiety of not fully knowing if you're dropping it into third or fifth kind of thing,
right,
you know, which is nice.
But it might be a harsher shift, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless you get into sort of the paddle shift version of modern cars, and some of those still have the gear selector on the, you know, on the center console, and you can bump it that way, you know, up or down. You could just put it in manual mode and bump it up or down. It's probably as close to the sequential simulation as you can get.
The guy who would love that is Mike August, because he does that with automatic cars.
Yeah, he's constantly shifting his
and
automatic.
It's as close as sequential as far as the movement goes, because he's taking the automatics and he's jamming up the gears, you know, with his hand all the time.
I guess if he likes to shift it on his own, that's fine. I would argue he's paying a lot more for fuel.
Every time we fly out for a trip, August is first off the plane. I'll go get the car. And it ditches me and Adam. And I always think, is he getting something that would be comfortable for us? Or is he just trying to get something that he can shift around? And that's why he's going solo.
Well, and he pays a premium in fuel, too. Because when he refuels the rental car that takes regular, he likes to put the super in it.
Oh, that's weird.
Before he returns it.
Yeah, he puts the premium.
That's weird. That's a weird move. But also, all that shifting is...
It's unclear whether he knows he does that.
I don't know if he... Do you think he does it on purpose? He can't do it on purpose. He must just think cars run on 91 octane, right? 87, he thinks is like for a vintage car or something, right? Maybe it's a timeline thing. It's not a...
No, the world will never know.
No, but also modern-day cars with an automatic transmission, like 7-speed, 8-speed, 9-speed transmissions, you'll go for the first fourth gears within the first 40 miles an hour. Like, it's very smart. It's all about fuel efficiency. And if you smash the throttle, it holds the gears longer. So Mike's theory of shifting on his own around town for 90% of his driving, he's probably just wasting fuel by not letting the thing shift on its own. If shifting on its own is going to be smarter than Mike August.
Well, he'll get to the Smoothie King that much faster if he's shifting in a shaft. And
that's his mode. To jump the dividers.
There's a barbecue plate or a veggie plate in the back of a comedy club somewhere that he needs to get to right away. Something with the stupid oatmeal cookies that nobody likes.
So Gordon Murray is going to build 25 of those. So says this, 15 have already been sold at $4.3 million.
Yeah. But I put this number in specifically because I thought it would catch your interest. 1,878 pounds. He can make a car that weighs less than 1,900 pounds.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's all about lightness and stuff. I don't even know what the street car weighs, but it's in the 2000s range. It's not, you know, it's not 3,000 pounds. It's got to be 2,800 pounds or something. It's just fantastic. And, of course, it looks crazy. And Dario Franchini is his right-hand man as far as the testing, kind of his spokesman, which is great because Dario's fantastic. And Dario's, you know, he's tweeting out. He's like, I can't wait to drive it. And he goes, and Gordon Murray was like, you're going to be the first one to drive it right after me.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's kind of cool looking. And just the amount of technology and how he's simplified it to get this whole fan and everything to work is pretty cool. I think when we see the car in person, maybe we'll be able to see one. I'm going to say Monterey, maybe at the Quail. There's got to be, this thing has to show up at the Quail, right?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be smaller than we think.
Yeah.
Although the street car is a 3-seater and the racing car is going to be the 2-seater. That's part of the weight reduction. So is it going to be just really short like a boxer, but really wide like a McLaren F1?
Yeah. It's got to be small at under 1,900 pounds. Speaking of not light, you went and drove the Bugatti.
I did. I drove the Bugatti Chiron, Pure Sport, not Chiron. So,
right.
Just so we know. It's a very interesting vehicle. It's different than
what's the sticker?
It was $4 million, but it had a $220,000 paint job on it. And the reason why is because the body is largely carbon fiber, even though the car weighs a lot. And this had it's called the Pure Sport Split.
Mm-hmm.
And it exposes a lot of the carbon fiber. When they paint the vehicle, they don't have to care about the carbon fiber appearance.
Mm-hmm.
When they expose the carbon fiber, it's a whole different process. Now all the it has to flow, the grain has to line up.
Right.
It has to be perfect, and that process is more expensive. So it has a $220,000 paint job, which really means less paint.
Right.
So it was
more carbon exposed.
Yeah, it's $4 million. It's a little bit lighter, fixed wing instead of the active wing, but it weighed 4,300 pounds. At $4 million, it's 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds. And then so the Chiron is sort of the middle. That's the one you get. And then the Pure Sport is the more handling-focused one. Mm-hmm. And then there will be a one with a crazier top speed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the top speed on this one was like 217 or 227. And the car can do the normal version is 267. And the reason why is it's all gear change. It's all just gear ratios at this point. Mm. They wanted this one to be a little bit lighter, more aggressive gearing, and it arguably is more fun to drive, especially around town, because it has all the great gearing to cut through the turns. I just did a two-hour drive.
It's quicker. It's not faster.
Right. It's exactly that. It's quicker, not faster. And the run I did that you're familiar with is we started in Santa Monica, drove over for 2 hours, went up PCH, went to Malibu Road to like Mulholland, and then back down to Panga Canyon all the way back down to
PCH.
You
should have gone full Tiger Woods with that thing.
I should have. I saw his thing, which everybody thought was the Bentley Bentayga, but it was the new Genesis SUV that he was driving.
Man, that guy can't afford a Bentley. He has to drive.
I don't know.
Hyundai.
Actually, he was playing golf in like a Genesis event, and they gave him the press car, which it's kind of good and bad because unfortunately he's hurt. But on the vehicle side, the vehicle is damaged, but also the vehicle saved his life. They literally are saying this thing with the airbags and the latest technology. And him rolling down a hill, the airbags stayed inflated for the most of that. Usually they pop and they go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that really saved him. But the Bugatti was nuts. When the Veyron came out, the bosses at Bugatti, you know, to quote them, were, I want a car that goes 200 miles an hour, and then I want to be able to take the wife to the opera. And so making power these days seems to be easier, and we can do it in some crazy vehicles. I drove the Senna and the 760 LT, you know, and it's a raw carbon fiber tub. You hear all the little rocks and pebbles, and the seats are kind of uncomfortable, but it's absolutely fun to drive. The Bugatti is as docile and as quiet as anything on the road, but when you smash the throttle, it takes off. It's just an incredible amount of power. And that's
where it has well over 1,000 horsepower.
It's 1,500 horsepower.
Wow.
It's 1,500 horsepower. But the only way to make that stick is if you think of the land speed cars, you need that weight, right? You kind of need that weight to keep that thing on the ground. You watch the Indy 500, they're doing 200 miles an hour, you know, around in circles, but the slightest little, you know, aggravation, that car flies up into the air like a paper airplane, right? So the Bugatti at 4,300 pounds, they were saying, I'm like, well, how does this thing get to 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds? He's like, well, 1,500 horsepower, all-wheel drive, tires made specifically for it, and then the weight keeps it planted. And then it's about putting that power to the ground more than it is making that power. And and the power is able to move that that weight around. But I was with the Bugatti driver. We just had a conversation the whole time, regardless of what mode we put it in and how we dug into the turns and, you know, opened that thing up through the tunnels. It's cool, but it kind of feels like almost anyone can drive it.
Mm.
You know, that's the expensive part. That's
so
where the
paddle shifting the whole time?
I wasn't paddle shifting the whole time, but you can. And then another interesting feature is The infotainment system doesn't have a big screen on the dash. It's just in the gauge cluster. And the reason why is that designers were saying every time you look into these cars, that's the first thing to get dated was the look of the touchscreen or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this just has a couple of knobs on a center console, like for AC, and the knobs actually change configuration. So it's just it's a physical tactile knob, and it says AC, but it can switch. You know, it has a little LCD screen, and it's like, oh, the AC control became a tuning device, you know, different mode. And then everything is just in the gauge cluster. So when you peek in the car and the gauges are blacked out, you just see a gauge cluster and then a couple of manual knobs, which I think is very cool.
Right.
The entire audio system is just a tiny on-off button, and then it gets controlled.
Diamond stitching in there?
A lot of diamond stitch, a lot of Alcantara in there. The design of it is very cool. That it has that big C shape on the side, but it has kind of this split window, kind of this Pete Brock 63 Corvette split window thing going on the design of it. And I know people are going to like, yeah, you can't see it and whatever out of it. You can kind of see out of it, and it's got digital cameras. And you're in a Bugatti. So people see you,
right?
Right. So everyone's stopping and looking at it. We pulled it over at the beach area to take photos of it. And
what was the color scheme?
It was a gray and black with an orange accent stripes. It was it's good. It's
orange is the new color and the new accent color.
Yeah.
Everyone's all up in orange.
Yeah,
now.
It's kind of the new red accent color. You do like a red mirror or red caliper, so you can do the orange stuff on it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting you say that because the Mustang Mach 1, the that I ordered has the appearance package and it has orange stripes and the orange calipers.
Yeah,
that's the accent color that they're doing.
All right,
anyway, it's cool. Yeah. It's fantastic.
All right, let me hit Geico here. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. And you probably like to get a little bundle going with your automotive policies so you can save a bunch of dough. At Geico, when you bundle those policies, it's a good thing too because you already got so much to do around the house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when Geico makes it easy for you to bundle. So go to geico.com and get your bundle on, yo. All right, so I'm looking here, and it's showing that Gunther Works, who built
single-ass
Porsches.
Have you seen the Gunther Works cars? They take the 993s, and they do a great job, full carbon fiber bodies. I think you and I saw one at our last SEMA show. It might have been like the Meguiar's paint booth, like, you know, the detailing booth, Meguiar's detailing booth. And so they came out with this Speedster, this 993 Speedster. And when the model year of this car, Porsche only made two. They gave Ferdinand Porsche one for his 60th birthday.
For the 993.
Yeah, for the 993 Speedster.
Uh-huh.
And then Seinfeld had a 993 Porsche. He sent it back to the factory, had it made into a Speedster. So only two of them exist.
Mm-hmm.
One is in Seinfeld's collection. The other one pops up occasionally in the Porsche Museum.
Mm.
So the
guys, looking.
Yeah, the Gunther Works guys said, hey, what's our, you know, not to steal a Singer word, what's our reimagined version of this car? And this is what they came up with. I think it's going to be somewhere priced like their coupe. So probably expect in the high fours, almost 500 grand. I'm sure the body's all carbon fiber. I love the cowls behind the headrest, and you know, sort of a rollover protection bar that's going on. It's cool. I would say, as much as we're fans of the Singer cars, get up on one of these Gunther Works cars and see the quality. It's nice. These things are really fantastic. I thought you saw it at SEMA when we were walking around.
It doesn't seem that familiar, but you know, I was running and running and running that day, probably.
Yeah, we had a bunch of stuff that day, but everything that they've done, you know, the engine, I think they do like a 400 horse, 425 horse naturally aspirated engine, which I think back in the day, the 993 turbo was about 400.
Yeah.
So they do their version of it.
Yeah.
And,
That's
you know,
all.
It looks cool. It looks good. So, you know.
Yeah, it'll be lightweight because it's all carbon fiber.
You know, when last week we talked about Porsche announcing the new GT3. But the other part of that press announcement was, you know, we're starting to see politicians saying, you know, I was talking to Alistair Weaver earlier in the week, and I'm going, hey, why is EV the big push? You know, and he's like, well, all the politicians pushed diesel because diesel was supposed to be cleaner, and then Dieselgate happened, and then that got dropped very quickly. So now they're all getting behind EV, mostly because of the
electric
hype. Mostly because of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There are some benefits, of course, but we don't really know exactly what it's going to cost to charge all of these cars. And you know, he said, hey, I've got a Tesla, and he had an electrician come and tell him it's $3,000 to put a 50-amp, 240, you know, 220 system. Right. And he's like, well, $3,000 sort of defeats the purpose of the fuel I was going to be saving on the lease. So Porsche has said that they're committing to an alternative fuel. It's hydrogen, carbon dioxide based. Now, this isn't the way we understood it. It's not to be confused with a hydrogen powered car like the Mirai. It's a liquid fuel.
Was that a Toyota?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Honda has one too. I forgot what they call it. And you know, back BMW experimented with that, is a liquid fuel that is clean burning, not 100%, but like 80 something percent cleaner than what we're burning now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying we could roll this out, and I guess it would potentially work in many of the combustion engine cars we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, so in Europe, there's the E-Fuel Alliance. Mazda was the first manufacturer to join that alliance to commit to an alternative fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Porsche is doing a lot. I assume they're going to join it next. Mm-hmm. But they said they're going to roll out this fuel as soon as 2022 in their motorsports and their Porsche Experience centers, those locations. They said those locations use 34,000 gallons of fuel a year. They're going to switch it all over to their alternative fuel, which implies to me that this is potentially just a pump fuel alternative, right? It doesn't like, you know, even when we look at E85, you know, there's the corrosion stuff, it's less efficient, you need bigger fuel pumps. And I think they're trying to get as close to an apples to apples comparison. I don't know what the octane rating is going to be. I don't know if you have to change fuel pumps or injector sizes or whatever. And maybe it doesn't work on cars, you know, without certain knock sensors. You know, cars 20 years old, modern, but 20 years. Maybe it's the last 10 years. But
I wonder where it's derived from.
They're saying hydrogen and carbon dioxide and then some other ingredients. But they said that our current fuel is, what, 30, 40 ingredients? This is going to be like 10.
Well, it's interesting. And, you know, if you think about the infrastructure of all the gas stations, all the pumps and everything that are all over the world, obviously, if you switch over to electric, they're all out of business. So it kind of, and you know, you also have to kind of think about like all, you take Los Angeles, like all the people who live in apartments, you know, little apartments, how could they all charge their cars up, you know, and especially we have a horrible electrical grid. So if they could swap out what's coming out of the pump right now with this or something like it, that would buy us probably another decade to put the finishing touches on the electric cars.
Certainly.
Or the infrastructure.
I mean, right now, all the politicians can do, and all we can do, all of us, is look forward and go, hey, maybe we should start moving to EV. And maybe certain countries are going to say it needs to be EV only. And, you know, California is saying no combustion engines can be sold. But what about all the combustion engines that are out there? And Alistair had pointed out that the life cycle of a car on average is 20 years. You know, whether you don't own it for 20 years, but like until it's basically gone, 20 years. So even if there's an initiative to go, oh, well, EV cars need to be, you know, the standard in 20 years from now, we're still going to have at least 20 years. Forget the collectors and us and whatever. But if there was a clean alternative that I can run in older cars, 10, 20-year cars, And if there was a benefit, it was, you know, whatever, it was clean burning. It didn't really make that much of a difference. You can go to gas stations, and they all started moving toward this type of thing. And it'd be cool if, you know, knowing Porsche, they're going to be like, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to come up with some sort of 93, 97, 98 octane version.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I don't think Porsche wants to invent an 85%, 87%, you know,
octane
version of it. So I don't know. It just seems kind of interesting that all the hype is around EV, but it doesn't have to be EV. Like, we got some pretty smart people out there that are coming up with some other things.
All right. Why don't you hit your last Dodge?
Yeah, you know, Dodge has officially opened the order books of the new 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat. This is the most powerful SUV ever. And exclusive for 2021, it features 710 horsepower engine. I know this thing scoots around to 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, and it's going to be limited production. They're only going to get 2,000 of them made, so you better get out there and hurry. It's got a new aggressive exterior styling, new interior with a driver-centric cockpit, and all buyers will receive a full day of pro instruction at the Bondurant High Performance Driving School.
Good.
Yeah, you're going to need it. Deliveries begin early this year, so rush in and get your order in right away. You know, Dodge is ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com today to schedule your test drive.
All right, I'm going to be at the Bricktown Comedy Club tonight and then Saturday. I'm going to do a live pod there. Tonight's got Kyle Dunnigan, always brings it, and then a stand-up late. I think tickets are about sold out, so you better get on that if you want to come out and say hi tonight. And Oklahoma City, Reno, Virginia Street Brewhouse, going to be there March 19th and 20th. And then Los Angeles, Jam in the Van, Speakeasy, March 25th. Couple of shows. Adam Ray's going to be there. Free Mangria and Cannabis with every purchase as well. Waukegan Genesee Theater, May 6th. So come on out and say hi. Go to amcorolla.com for all the dates. What do you got, Matt?
Yeah, just follow me at Motorator on social media. I'm posting all kinds of fun stuff.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.